ラッタッタッタッタララタラッタッタッタッタララタラッタッタッタッタララタタララタラタラタラタタ。
Hello and welcome. I'm Helen.
And I'm Caroline.
And we love to sew. This is a podcast for makers where we talk about sewing a handmade wardrobe and bring you interviews with inspiring creatives and small business owners in our community.
Today we are chatting with Emily Hunt from In the Folds. Emily is a pattern designer and sustainable fashion advocate. She's currently crowdfunding her paper patterns using Kickstarter. We talk about making the leap to print, her unique approach to design, and how she got where she is today.
And this episode has a pretty special moment in it.
Oh my gosh. Stay tuned, you guys. It is so good. Hi, Emily. Thanks for coming on the show.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. We're so excited to talk to you today. But let's just start off by you telling us a little bit about yourself, what you do, where you're from, all that good stuff.
Okay, cool. So I'm Emily. I run indie pattern company In the Folds. I'm based in Sydney, Australia, and I run my little business from a studio in my local area.
And when did you learn to sew?
I learned to sew when I was about 9 or so. My mom sent me to a holiday sewing camp. I don't know if it's still a thing, but it was the 90s, so it was definitely a thing then. So it was just a local woman who ran sewing classes in a small studio in my local area. And my mom is much sportier than me, so she tried out netball and running all different sporty things, but I just didn't really take to it. So she found this sewing school that I could go to during the school holidays, and I was the youngest by far. But I just fell in love with it. I couldn't believe how amazing it was. And my first thing I made was a beach bag. My mum still uses it, actually. And it was made of all these panels. And my teacher during the night would panel mine up because I was so far behind the rest of the class because I was about 5 years younger than them all. And then after that, I just started going to school and telling everyone about what I was doing and kind of roped in a few friends. And we all started going to after-school sewing classes. And the rest is history, really.
That is amazing. And then you turned your passion for sewing into a business down the line, right?
I did. So that wasn't really part of the plan. I studied fashion design, so I always knew I wanted to work in this field, in the fashion world. And then I went to university and I loved my course and I learned so much, but I kind of got a bit turned off the whole fashion industry while I was there. I was introduced to the idea of sustainable fashion and ethical fashion, and I hadn't really thought about where our clothes were made prior to that. I was a bit naive about it all, to be honest. And it really got me thinking about how clothing was made and the system and how I didn't really want to be part of it, which left me feeling a little bit stuck when I finished my 4-year degree, thinking I just had no idea what I was going to do and where I would end up in the fashion system.
So when you were in fashion school, you were learning about ethical fashion, but then afterwards, there wasn't really like an avenue for you or a clear path for you to go down as far as incorporating that into your future career.
Yeah, exactly. But I also think career wasn't really discussed. My fashion school, it was amazing, but it was very much about exploring what you wanted to do, almost in an arts way. So we didn't really learn about trends or forecasting or anything that would make us understand how the industry actually worked. So when I finished, I felt quite clueless about what the industry even looked like and realized that in Sydney, there's not even much of an industry anymore. A lot of people are producing offshore and it's just not like it used to be. So I moved to the UK. So I had decided that long before I even went to university, that was kind of the dream, that I just wanted to go overseas and experience some new things. So I decided on London because it just made sense. I don't speak another language and I knew the fashion scene there would be good, or I thought it would be. And so I moved there in 2012 to see what I could find there.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but I think I saw an Instagram post that you shared where you said you moved to London with just like a backpack, like you didn't have anything, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I left Sydney with I have a backpack, which is really daggy. I call it Monty. So I had a blog called M and Monty, and it was my travel blog, me shipping it around the world. And a girlfriend and I studied fashion with her. We took off from Sydney and we spent about 3 months traveling Europe with our backpacks. And then she moved to New York and then I moved to London. And yeah, I rocked up with this 15 kilogram backpack and I knew one person who I'd known a few years before. We weren't close or anything like that, but I had one contact and she let me sleep on her couch and I kind of took it from there.
Okay, so what did you do once you got to London? You found a place to stay and were you looking for a job? Were you wanting to go back into school again?
In my usual fashion, I kind of didn't think beyond getting there. Getting there was the big deal. And then once I got there, it suddenly occurred to me that I had no idea what I was going to do because I had my degree, but I didn't have any experience. Well, apart from a few internships I'd done through university. So I didn't think anyone would employ me. So then I realized I'd have to be interning. And then it occurred to me to intern in London. You obviously need to pay the bills somehow as well. So I kind of had a momentary freak out, called home and said, I don't know what I was thinking moving here. And then thankfully, a few days later, it occurred to me that I've always been good with kids. So I thought, how about I do some babysitting and nannying? And then that should be able to afford me to be able to go and do internships. So I found a family who I worked for the whole time I was there and I would do the after school pickup and stuff. So during the day I could go and do internships.
Wow. Good for you. Hustling it out.
Serious hustling.
So where did you do your internship?
So when I moved there, the idea was I had the feeling that I wanted to do pattern making. It was what I kind of felt very comfortable doing at university. So I was looking for hands-on kind of in the studio positions. But while I was looking, I saw an ad for something called The Good Wardrobe, and it was definitely not what I was looking for. It was an online sustainable and ethical fashion hub. And I was just taken by Zoe, who was the founder, and her story. And I thought I'd give it a go because it was something I was very interested in, even though I didn't think I was interested in the online business world. So I met up with her and kind of the rest is history. I interned with her for about 2 years. So a couple of days a week, I would go to her place. She just ran a little business from our place. And we wrote blog posts. We did mending workshops. We went to London Fashion Week and reported on the ethical fashion side of things. And that's when I really realized how amazing the whole online world was and that there were heaps more options for me than I'd thought.
So is that when you discovered the online home sewing world?
Yeah, it is. So Zoe had done an interview with Tilly and the Buttons. And I was just reading through her blog, well, reading through Zoe's blog and read through this interview. And I just couldn't believe there was this woman running this business and she was sewing. So I went on to Tilly and the Buttons blog. And then obviously it just opened up a whole world of sewing blogs. And yeah, that's when I realized other people were sewing. I kind of thought it was maybe just old people and the people I went to fashion school with. I didn't realize there was something in between those things.
Did you find it interesting comparing the fashion industry with the home sewing sort of community online? Because they are so different, but at the same time, there's like that crossover, right?
Yeah, most definitely. I just felt really inspired and liberated by women making clothes that fit their bodies. I think that's what really hit home for me because in the fashion world, it's all standardized sizing and, you know, you make one block and you grade it up. And that's how I had been taught. I hadn't even really been taught much about fitting at fashion school. It was very much size 10, this is how we do it. And then by seeing people sewing, I realized there was so much more than that. And it also just made me realize that it was, to me, a much more sustainable way of producing clothes. Because if you make them yourself and they're made to fit you, you're going to feel much better in it. You're going to take care of it. You're going to keep it rather than when you buy off the shelf and maybe it doesn't fit you that well. So you just, you know, you don't bond with it. You just get rid of it and replace it.
So you discovered the online sewing community. Tell us about the progression from you like working in more of the fashion industry and then deciding to start your company.
Well, there was kind of a big gap of time in there. So I had been doing another internship as well. So I was also interning in a studio doing a bit of basic pattern cutting and cutting samples and that kind of thing. And I was just growing more and more frustrated with it because I was asking to be able to do more. But because I was just the intern, it was, you know, they would get someone else in to do the pattern making. And I just realized I'd never learn what I wanted to learn like that. So I thought I'd start a blog too. But at this point, I still didn't really realize how many people were blogging and how many blogs were out there. So I bought a sewing machine, bought a really basic desk, got a really minimal setup and set up in my bedroom making some basic patterns. And I started a blog called M Makes Patterns. And I just started making things and documenting it. And that's when I kind of really honed into what my work was about and got into showing people how to do things. And I realized I really like making tutorials to show people how to do things and to make clothes that fit them. And yeah, so that's kind of when the whole blogging side of things started appealing to me as something I would like to do.
And at that point, was it a business or that was a blog for personal and teaching purposes?
Yeah, exactly. It was definitely not a business. And I still kind of hadn't thought about the business. And then 2 years or so into being in London, because I'm Australian, you can't stay there beyond 2 years because of the visa. So I knew I had to come home and I really, really, really didn't want to come home. I was very happy in London. So I started trying to think about what I could do at home that would make me want to be back home and kind of sink my teeth into something else. And the idea had been kind of playing in my mind a little bit of starting a business, but I hadn't spoken to anyone about it. I hadn't put it out there. I hadn't even told my partner. And I met my partner in London and he moved back to Sydney with me. And on our way back, we stopped in Thailand for a little while and I sat him down and I said, I think I want to start a business. What do you think? And he's been cheering me on since the beginning. So he thought it was a great idea. And when I moved back to Sydney, it just seemed like a good time to do it because I was used to living very frugally from London and from university. And I also didn't have a job to come back to. So I thought it was a good time to do it. So I didn't end up just in a job for a while, which would have probably been much harder to leave.
Yeah, you didn't have that like quintessential moment of having to decide whether or not you were going to leave your day job. You sort of had this open space that you could really envision any sort of future for yourself in. So that must have been really inspiring.
Yeah, it was one of those moments that I knew probably wouldn't happen again, or at least anytime soon it wouldn't happen again. So I just thought it was the time to take advantage of it and kind of see what would happen and just give it a go. I kind of thought there was no harm in trying something for a little while. And if it didn't work out, I would know I gave it a shot and then could go and find a job.
Yeah, that is so great that you had that opportunity and decided to just seize it. And with the support of your partner, it sounds like it was just the perfect time for you to start your company. So tell me, how did you go about starting In the Folds? Did you already have like a community that you were interacting with online that you were able to sort of tell them about your company, or was it cold turkey?
It was actually cold turkey. I was so clueless to what was going on. So I went and did this small business course. It was very basic, but it was a good way to kind of start formulating a business plan, which of course I've never looked at since I wrote it, but it was a good time to do it. And I did have an Instagram account, but I didn't really use it. I didn't really get it. And a girlfriend said that I should be on Instagram for my new business idea. And I said, oh no, I'm sure I'm fine with my personal account. It's no, you know, it doesn't really matter. And basically she made me an Instagram account and just started posting from it. And straight away I saw that people were engaging. And I said to her that I realized that she was probably onto something that I'd overlooked.
Yeah, I think you owe her like a bouquet of flowers or something.
I owe her a lot for sure. And I tell her that whenever I see her, we laugh about how naive I was about what was going on in the world. But it was pretty much cold turkey. I launched my Instagram days before I launched my website and my first pattern, which was the Rush Cutter. And I remember thinking on the day, oh, I'd be so disappointed if I don't even sell a pattern on launch day. And in hindsight, I can't believe I thought I would sell a pattern on launch day, which I did, which is unbelievable that anyone even took the risk on this random person who just told the world that they were making patterns now. But I find it really amazing that when you're that naive about what's going on, you kind of just really bold, aren't you?
It's so true. I remember when I did my first pattern, the Winslows, I was talking to, I think it was Christine Haynes, was like, I can't believe you did pants for your first pattern. And I was like, you know what? It didn't even occur to me that that was going to be a problem, like that they're hard to fit or that people like have challenges making them. I just didn't think about that. I was like, no, I want to do pants.
Yeah, exactly. That kind of, it's really amazing, that feeling where you just, yeah, you don't really realize what you're stepping into. I can't even believe people agreed to test my first pattern. You know, people were willing to spend time making something and cut into their fabric to make something by some person they didn't even know, or, you know, I had no proof that I knew what I was doing, basically.
But you must have had some ideas of what was happening in the community because you had the foresight to do a proper test and you knew sort of how to reach out to people in general, because you started selling on Etsy, correct?
Yeah, I did. So basically, I'm just a research junkie. I've always loved researching. So when I started thinking this is what I wanted to do, I basically just started stalking everyone who I thought was amazing in the community, just taking notes of everything they were doing and basically just tried to mimic it, which is generally how I do everything in life, is I just mimic people who I think are great. And generally, if you do that, obviously I'm never going to be able to compare to someone who has a team of 10 people. But I feel that if I'm aiming at that level, then at least I'll get part of the way there and it will be better than that if I was comparing myself to someone at my level, which is really small.
It is such a good place to start. And I think we're really blessed in this community that there are so many amazing people doing really high quality work and putting so much effort into their businesses and putting things out there for the community. So if you're modeling yourself after those people, you know that A, you're going to be successful, and B, that you're going to be helping people with their sewing journey. So we're lucky in that way.
Yeah, for sure. And people are so transparent. So I think we may as well take that as an opportunity that people are telling you how they're going about things. So I think it's a great way to learn from it. And then now I try and do the same. I try and be as transparent as possible. So in the hope that maybe I will help other people who are trying to start out now and kind of help them cut some corners that I was able to cut because I saw how other people were doing it.
Yeah, I mean, you helped me at one point because I reached out to you about the VAT taxes from Europe, and you really helped me out explaining to me how that worked. So I was super grateful for that. And
oh, good.
It was my first experience like reaching out to a fellow designer and asking a question like that. And you were so gracious and so helpful. And it made me realize that I could have those kind of non-competitive relationships with people in the community. And it really was just eye-opening.
Well, yeah, for sure. Because I just think we're not in competition. If you get more people sewing or if I get more people sewing, that's good for both of us, right?
Yeah.
So it's kind of a collective thing. And particularly most of us are all, you know, we're designing different things for different people. So it doesn't feel like competition at all. But for that example, I had read so much about that and had confused myself for weeks and weeks. So it was so nice to be able to package it up into a little, you know, paragraph for someone and know that you didn't have to go and do that because it was awful.
Yeah, you probably saved me hours of my life. So.
Yeah, and boring Thank hours you. At that.
And you're so right about, I think every designer brings something different to the table, and you certainly do. I think you have a very unique style. I would love for you to tell our listeners a little bit about your design philosophy and your style for your pattern line.
Well, my design style has always been very much about the everyday. So even when I was at university, I wasn't very interested in designing ball gowns or evening wear or anything like that. I really like the idea of making clothes that people will want to wear. And want to wear every day. So that's kind of what I think about when I'm designing. I want to make sure women or makers feel great in their garments and feel comfortable in them, but also feel put together. So I like the idea of them being really refined and interesting and having nice details that they'll feel proud of.
Yeah, the nice details thing is really evident. I mean, you say sort of everyday wearable garments, and they totally are, but they are so unique and so special. And I think you mentioned in your Kickstarter campaign, which we're going to talk about later, but you mentioned in the video that you're not intending your clothes to be things that you can sew up in an hour. They're meant to be cherished and meant to be taken as like an opportunity to really get into your creative practice. So can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, for sure. So basically, I've always designed in a way that my patterns generally have a lot of pieces. There's always some weird shape pieces in there. It's kind of just how I work and what appeals to me. But that, of course, does take time to make. And the more I thought about it, the more I realized that's something that I really like about what my patterns are about. Because we all have enough clothes, don't we? So I don't think people are really sewing to fill their wardrobes anymore. We've kind of hit that point where everyone has what they need, but you still want to sew. So I like the idea of creating patterns that will take a bit longer and you can really explore your skills and learn something new, but not feel like it's a rush to the end. With that, hopefully when you finish it, you have something you're really proud of and is just as beautiful on the inside as it is on the outside.
Yeah, I love the idea of slowing down and taking your time with sewing. I think we all get into this zone sometimes where we're just trying to finish our garment so that we can start the next one. Mm-hmm. And we lose sight of the fact that we all probably have enough clothes in our closet, like you said, and we don't necessarily need to be, you know, getting 5 new garments every week out of this hobby. I think that like your philosophy of slowing down is just so valuable and so smart and so thoughtful. And I love it so much.
Thank you. We do love great. Your patterns, especially the Acton dress. We're both obsessed with it.
Oh my gosh. I have it like on my list of garments to make, and Helen has made it, and I totally went over to her place and I was like, I'm trying that on now. And I tried it on and now I just want to make it even more. I love it.
It's so cool.
How amazing is that for you guys that you can each test things out and then try each other's on before deciding whether you want to make it?
Oh my God, it's such a lifesaver.
It's pretty great. Yeah, we're not exactly the same size, but we're like right near each other, near enough to each other that we can usually try on each other's garments. So it's pretty fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing.
So how long ago did you start in the fold?
So I did that small business course around the middle of 2015. And then I launched my website and the Rush Cutter in October 2015. So just over 2 years I've been going.
And what made you decide to think about getting into paper patterns and starting your Kickstarter campaign?
Well, from the beginning, I knew that I would want to do printed patterns, but obviously it's a big investment. And I also didn't know what I was doing at all when I started. So I thought PDF patterns were a great way to start, because I could just learn as I went without having to invest too much money into it. Also, I knew I could release a pattern and, you know, if there was a typo or something in the instructions, it wouldn't be the end of the world. Whereas if I'd taken it into print, it would have been very different. It was a conscious decision then, but over the last 2 years, I've been very thankful that I didn't go into print straight away, because my work has matured so much in that time and I've learned so much. And now I just know, I have a much better idea of what I'm doing than I did 2 years ago.
Yeah. Okay. Listeners, I promise we're going to get into this Kickstarter thing soon, but I do want you to tell us a little bit about how you have evolved over time and what you've learned over the past couple of years, because you just touched on that.
Yeah. So with the Rush Cutter, I literally didn't know anything. So I knew how to draft a pattern. I knew how to make samples, obviously, and those kind of things. And I knew how to grade manually, but I'd never digitized a pattern. I'd never graded digitally. I had been playing around a bit with drawing on Illustrator, so I had a pretty good working knowledge of the Adobe Creative Suite from university. And because of my original blog, I'd kind of gotten used to the idea of drawing, you know, drawing instructions. But bringing that all together, there was just so much to learn. It took me so long to kind of pull it all together and learn all those steps. But as I said, with making, I like things going slowly. And I'm kind of the same with my creative work. I try and go slow and make sure I know what I'm doing. And I just let things brew, basically. So I never force myself to get something done in a really short space of time, which infuriates me sometimes, but I've accepted recently. It's just the way I work. And sometimes I just have to, you know, just have to let it be and evolve. So I learned all of that while I was doing the Rush Cutter. And then when I produced the Acton, which was the next pattern, I went into it thinking I knew what I was doing somewhat, but then I learned a whole lot of things during that process too. So for the Rush Cutter, I'd photographed all the instructions. And then when I did the Acton, I'd photographed them all as well. And then someone mentioned in the tester feedback that she preferred illustrated instructions. And it suddenly occurred to me that maybe more people did. So I put a post up on Instagram asking what people thought. And, you know, the resounding answer was illustrations. So I basically went back and illustrated the whole thing after the pattern was already ready to go and tested. But I just knew I wouldn't have been comfortable releasing it when I'd kind of worked out that it wasn't what my customer wanted. That's probably the main thing I learned doing the Acton. And then as I came into doing the Collins, I'm trying to think of the timeline, but I think maybe when I started the Collins is when I realized I needed to start working part-time again. So time was limited and I started thinking about outsourcing more and how I could get help. So the Collins was a real learning curve in how to go about that.
So now you're working part-time somewhere else?
Yeah. So I actually work 4 days a week elsewhere. So I work 3 days a week as a receptionist in a resort for people with spinal cord injuries. And then 1 day a week I babysit. So that just leaves me, I have 2 days a week in the studio and kind of pockets of time on my other work days. So at this point I'm working 6 days a week, which is a lot.
Yeah, I can imagine that being a lot. And you're running this pattern company and
killing it.
Killing it. Yeah,
you're doing totally such a good job. I mean, I don't think anyone from the outside would look at what you're doing and think that you were balancing all of these other things, because it seems very seamless.
Yeah. Well, I'm an advocate of fake it till you make it. So I'm lucky enough that with my other jobs, they're kind of, it's not so much 9 to 5. So say on a Monday, I work 12 midday till 8 p.m. So I have a few hours in the morning. So I make sure I get to the studio and kind of line a few things up. And it's just made me have to be very organized and thinking ahead of what needs to be done. But it's also made me think about what actually needs to be done. So I used to be in the studio 4 or 5 days a week, and I just could do anything and everything, but wouldn't actually get that much done. And now that my time is so limited, I go in there knowing exactly what has to be done, and I just don't waste my time doing the other things. So obviously things suffer. Like, I haven't blogged in, I can't even tell you how long. That's something that's really gone down. But, you know, I'm still plodding along, and I'm sure it's okay to not blog for a few months. You know, the world's not going to end.
No, it's true. And it does take a lot of time to put those kind of things together. So I can understand wanting to prioritize the things that are going to move your business forward more than anything else.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I just have to really work on prioritizing, which doesn't mean I'm perfect at it. And sometimes I'll spend a whole day doing something that I thought was really important. And then looking back, I realize it was probably not the most important thing, but it does just make you put things into focus and really think about it.
So do you have an office or like studio space that is outside of your home, or do you work from home?
No, I have a studio space. Originally, we were basically living in one bedroom. So I had nowhere to work. So I found a shared studio space. And now we're in a place that I probably would have space to work if I wanted. But I did get used to what it was like to work outside of home. And so I'm in a local creative space with about, I'd say there's about 9 of us in there. So I share my direct studio with my friend Kate. You might know her as Sewing with Kate.
Yeah,
so we met on Instagram and kind of met and fell in love, kind of like you guys. And we found it. Well, I was already in a studio. So a month or so later, she moved into that studio. And then a few months later, we were both hoping to move and find a studio space with more light. And so we moved into another space together. And now we're in there with about 6 painters. And then there's one other sewer, and then the 2 of us.
Oh, great. And do you have the end goal of doing In the Folds full time again? Or are you hoping to be able to balance it with other work?
Well, the dream would be to do In the Folds full time for sure. But I do sometimes, I do get a lot out of my part-time work. And I sometimes wonder if I would lose my mind if I was just doing In the Folds all the time. It's hard to know. I would say I would love to be doing In the Folds full time and then see how it goes and make a decision from there.
Yeah. Once you get to the point where there's like enough to do and enough income coming in, I'm sure that might be a little bit of a game changer in terms of balancing your other work and In the Folds.
Well, exactly. And I think when you're working for someone else, you feel, you know, time is money. You're paid by the hour. And you just make this set amount of money for this time. But when you're working for yourself, I guess it's appealing to think that you could, you know, you don't have to work 1 hour to earn X dollars. And you can kind of, you know, tailor your schedule around you and how you want to work it.
Yeah, for sure. It's freeing and also like caging at the same time. It's a weird kind of feeling because you become so almost like obsessed with tracking how you're doing. And it's hard to relate that to having like a regular paycheck. They just don't really compare. So it's definitely, it's been an adjustment for me. I was like at tangent. I'm like, I feel you.
No, but I bet it would be, because I love, like, every fortnight I get paid and I sit down and I allocate the money to each bill or account. And I find that process really grounding. And I really enjoy doing it every week. Every fortnight. I'm kind of a control freak with my finances. And I wonder how I would feel about it if I didn't have that fortnightly time to sit down and make sure everything was running smoothly financially.
Yeah, for sure. So I'm curious because you also do some work with Peppermint Magazine, right?
Mm-hmm, I do.
So is that like an ongoing sort of arrangement you have with them? Like, do you get paid to draft patterns for them and then they can offer those to their readers?
Yeah, exactly. So that I find it amazing how that relationship even came about. So Peppermint Magazine is an Australian publication. They're based in Brisbane, so nowhere close to me. But I'd seen that they release a sewing pattern with each issue. So it's a quarterly publication. And just one day I thought, I'm going to email them and tell them what I do and see if they're interested. So I just emailed saying, hi, I'm Emily. This is what I do. If you ever need a pattern maker, I'm available. And they wrote back straight away and said, oh, actually, our pattern maker we've been using is no longer doing it for us. Would you like to make the pattern for the next issue? And just like that, I was making patterns.
Wow. So serendipitous.
Well, yeah. And it also made me realize that you get to a certain point where you don't really need a CV anymore. You kind of, particularly with the internet, you have this social proof that you know what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly you don't really have to plead your case. People already can look at your works through your website or Instagram and believe that you know what you're doing. So I started producing patterns for them. I think I've done 6 or 7 maybe by now. So every quarter I make a pattern for them. And yeah, as you said, they pay me to produce the pattern, and then I make a sample and I send it up to them, and then they photograph it in-house. And then I make a digital pattern. So if you buy the magazine, you'll see the images in there, but you actually go to their website and just download the pattern as a PDF and print it out at home.
I just am so excited about this. It's so fabulous. It's free for you mm-hmm. listeners out there. If you are not familiar with this Peppermint Magazine free pattern business, you go to their website. You can grab all of them. They're beautifully designed. They have Emily's very unique design aesthetic, but they're a little bit simpler. They don't have quite so many pieces often, so they're faster to sew, but they still have that unique look. And I mean, they're great. They seem like they shouldn't be free. That's what I'm saying. Well,
yeah, I've seen it as a great opportunity because I loved the idea of producing patterns for free so that people could try out my work. But when I realized how much time goes into it, it's just not feasible to do it. So this way I'm getting paid for my time, but people can try out my work. And yeah. As you said, they're in my aesthetic, but they are much simpler. And that's been the biggest challenge actually, because Peppermint tell me kind of exactly what they would like pretty much. And so they might say, so the recent one is a dress it's a boxy dress with a placket and pleated skirt. And looking at that and having to make it my own can sometimes be really challenging. But it's really important to me that these designs reflect my aesthetic, because otherwise there's no point in me doing them, I don't think. So I really work hard on making sure they kind of blend in with what I'm already producing under my own label.
That's great. I didn't realize that they would give you like an outline of the type of garment that they're looking for that quarter, and then you would design something within your own aesthetic. I think that's an interesting model.
Well, yeah, it's very prescriptive, basically. So I guess sometimes I find it easier. I kind of like the parameters. My own creative work, it takes me weeks and weeks to come up with what I'm actually trying to design. I might start a garment and then change it and change it and change it. Whereas when I've got those parameters, it's quite clear what I need to do. And so the development takes nowhere near as long as when I'm doing my own patterns.
Okay. I don't think that I can wait any longer. I want to talk about the Kickstarter campaign that you have going right now. And you are trying to raise funds to put your patterns in print. Mm-hmm. Have you checked recently? Because before we started recording, I seem to remember you saying that you were very close to your goal.
And that it might happen during the interview. So check your phone. Let's see where we're at.
I made it! Yay!
Congratulations. Oh my God.
I'm actually a little bit teary. I can't believe it.
Oh, Emily, wonderful.
It's funny that I'm surprised, because when we jumped on the call, I was at about 9,883 or something. And now I'm at 10,063, but it's amazing. And I just feel relieved, but also in shock, because the campaign's only been running 6 days. And I just never in a million years thought that I kind of hoped I would hit it, but I never in a million years thought I'd hit it 6 days into it.
Yeah, oh my gosh. I mean, I'm not surprised, because I think your designs are amazing and your paper patterns look beautiful. So I'm not surprised people are excited about them at all, but it's very cool that you were able to use crowdfunding in this way to support your business. So let's talk about it.
Yeah. So our listeners can go and still support you because you're going to continue to collect funds until the end of December. Mm-hmm. So tell everybody a little bit about this Kickstarter and what you're going to use the money for, and just give them your spiel.
Okay, so I decided to use Kickstarter because I knew I needed about $10,000 to get my patents into print, because when you do it, you need, there are minimums to meet to kind of make the price low enough that it's worth doing. And I do want to start wholesaling the patents to retailers. So they kind of have to be at a certain price point for that to even be feasible. I knew that I needed this lump sum of money to do it, which lent itself well to Kickstarter. But I also knew that I wanted to test that, if I wanted to know if people actually wanted my product before I did it, because it's all well and good for me to try and save up $10,000 and make print all these patterns, but there's no way of knowing if people will actually buy it. So people had asked me for them, so I knew there was some demand, but I thought by doing Kickstarter, it meant people would have to pledge for a pattern. So then I would already know, I would already sell my first few hundred patterns basically by running it through Kickstarter. So that's why I did it that way. And it also gave kind of a formal way for people to help. I know a lot of my friends and family are always trying to help. They know that I'm hustling all the time for this little business. So it gave kind of a formal way for people to help and contribute without it feeling awkward.
It's such a new thing. Like, it's so many people are now able to present their ideas on these crowdfunding websites and get support from people. My partner is huge into this. He loves supporting people who are trying to make new board games. And there's really like stuff for everyone out there. And it's just so cool that people can just pledge like anything from a dollar and up and offer their support in any way that they can afford.
Yeah, it's amazing. And I know our generation really gets it. But I remember when I told my grandma I was doing it, she couldn't wrap her head around it. She thought I was asking for donations, and she didn't have a problem with me doing it. And she's pledged and she supports it 100%, but she just couldn't believe that was a thing and that that's something that's kind of normal in this day and age for us to be able to ask for funds like that and how the whole system works. So yeah, it's pretty amazing that it's something that we can do now, and we don't have to go and try and get money from the bank, which for a lot of us doing these creative things probably wouldn't be successful.
Yeah. So tell our listeners a little bit about the structure of a Kickstarter campaign, because it isn't a donation really, that people are pledging their money, but then you have to deliver a product and they're sort of investing in your company in that way. So how does that work on your end now that you've reached your goal? What are you having to deliver?
So now I have to really think about, really need to get the ball rolling on these things. So I'm taking the Rush Cutter, the Acton dress, and the Collins top into print. So they're the first three patterns. So now people have pledged for those patterns. There was also a tote bag, and there's also a launch event happening here in Sydney. So I made tickets to that, also something that people could pledge for. So now I will finalize everything. So the patterns are ready to go, because as you know, those patterns have already been released as digital downloads. So I did just have to convert them into print format. But I'd also rebranded in the last few months. So each of my patterns, I needed to rebrand the pattern and the instructions. So I just need to get them edited. I just want to do one final swoop and make sure that there's no typos. And then I found a local printer who's in walking distance to my studio, which I love. And I'll take it around to him and we'll just press print. And then I'll actually be having to assemble them. So I'll be folding all the pages, the A0 sheets of the pattern, putting the instruction booklets in the envelope, and then shipping them out to everyone early next year.
Wow. That's so exciting. And so tell us a little bit about the physical patterns that you're printing. Is the paper tissue, or is it like a thicker cardstock?
So I decided that I wanted to print on paper. So it's just a 90 GSM paper. I like it because it's a bit more stable than the standard tissue. You know, it will last longer. But the other thing is, being in Australia, I've realized now that I'm doing this, it's much harder to do these things here. So I have so many beautiful patterns that I've bought from designers in the US or the UK, and I took them to my printer and showed them kind of what I'm going for. And so many times they would just say, no, we can't do that here, and particularly not for the numbers I'm looking at doing. So I've had to kind of accept that things aren't the same here, and I've had to yeah, just accept that that's how it is. So the pattern will be printed on A0 sheets, which will then be folded up and put with the instruction booklet inside the envelope.
Oh, okay. So you're actually going to have to assemble all of these things yourself.
I am. So I'm interested to see how it goes. It's hard. I've assembled a few. So if you check out my Kickstarter campaign and the video, you can see I have samples. But obviously doing just the three of them didn't take me very long. Mm-hmm. Luckily, I have some trusty friends and family who I plan to rope into doing my first run with me. And then I guess by doing that, I'll see how sustainable it is to be folding them myself like that.
Yeah, it seems like a good plan to rope your friends and family into helping you with this and make like an assembly line for patterns.
Exactly. I was just imagining getting a case of beer and a couple of bottles of wine. And I suggested this to my printer. And he said, it's a good idea in theory, Emily, but imagine the state of the last few patterns if you do that. And I said, good idea. Maybe I'll just get orange juice and sparkling water.
Just so you make them wait until after it's over to bust out the beer.
Exactly.
And I did watch the video for your Kickstarter campaign and I got to see a little close up of the packaging and I think it's beautiful. I personally cannot wait to carry your patterns in my store.
Thank you.
And I think you've done a wonderful job designing everything. I mean, I can't wait to see them in person.
Yeah, I'm curious to hear a bit about your rebrand because you did change your logo and I have to say I was very fond of your old logo, although your new one is also amazing. But I'm curious to know what made you decide to switch over.
Well, when I started in the folds, I didn't have one customer. I didn't have anything. I didn't really know what I was doing. So a friend and I, she's a graphic designer, sat down and did my first logo. And I love what she did. I think it's beautiful. And that's what I stepped out into this sewing world with. But as I slowly grew and started understanding who my customer was, it just didn't feel like it reflected what I'm doing anymore. And when I started thinking about going to print, I just knew that was something I really wanted to refine and get nailed down before I printed, you know, thousands of copies of patterns with something that just didn't feel right anymore. But I'd say the rebrand has been the biggest hurdle in this whole getting my patterns to print thing. Because I remember on the 1st of January of this year, I put it out there and said, this is my resolution. This year I'm getting my patterns into print. But it took me until May to find a designer. And I started working with her. And within a month or so, I just realized that we just weren't gelling with what I wanted. And so I ended up having to find another designer. And I started working with her from June. And now it's December. And I'm finally, you know, launched this Kickstarter campaign. But it just feels very... It's a difficult thing to do because it's your baby and it's what you're putting out into the world. And it just feels so important to get it just right.
It's been a long time coming. So I think you've put so much thought into it. I don't think you're going to regret taking the time to get your rebrand right and make sure that everything is, you know, in place so that when you do put these patterns in print, you're really in love with them and in love with the design of them.
Well, exactly. And I feel like they reflect me. But it was really hard to get to that point because my aesthetic isn't really what's trendy right now. So at the beginning, I found myself being drawn to this very, you know, Scandinavian minimal kind of look and then started doing things in that nature. And my wise friend, the one who got me on Instagram, just said, none of these colors or these styles reflect who you are. And I really just had to face up to it and realize, although my aesthetic might not be totally trendy and in right this very second, it is me and it will be something that hopefully in time I'll still feel happy with because it's not something that's trendy and in vogue right now.
Yeah, you do have to be true to yourself in life, but especially I think in small business because that's what makes you unique and what makes your business and is what's going to make you memorable. So good for you for persevering and your new logo is beautiful. Your packaging is beautiful. I can't wait to see it in person.
Yeah, I'm really happy with it. The designer I worked with was just amazing and I was so impressed with how well she kind of tackled the brief. And what was so shocking about it was I've never met her. She's in New Zealand and I saw her, I linked to her website online and just loved what she did. And from the moment I got in touch with her, she was just very professional, very interested in what I was doing and very able to kind of reflect exactly what I wanted. And since I got a taste for working with a designer, I am not going back. I used to do so much of these things myself because I have, you know, these basic skills in Illustrator. But since working with her, I've just realized how much easier it is just to get some help with these things. And she can make something in an hour or two that would probably take me a day to finish.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I think that when you realize that outsourcing things, sometimes even though it's more of an expense, it ends up being so valuable to your business. That is like, you know, that's growth, and that's part of the progression of building a small business. I've certainly realized that certain things are better outsourced, and I think everybody could stand to learn a lesson from this for sure.
Well, yeah, for sure. When I started, which you do when you start, you do everything yourself. And I feel that was very important to my journey, was to learn how to do everything myself, like how to digitize, how to grade, how to illustrate, all of those things. But in time, once I realized that I could outsource certain things, I freed up all this time to do the stuff that I really love doing. And it also meant the quality was better. So the quality of the work my designer's doing is far higher than the quality of the work I do. And getting the patterns graded by a grader, the quality is better than me sitting down and doing it slowly on Illustrator manually. So it's definitely been an eye-opener for me. But I also feel it was important at the beginning to do things myself, because now I can spot an error from a mile away. So if there's an issue when my grading comes back, I can see it straight away. Whereas if I hadn't learned how to do that at the beginning, I probably wouldn't have known if there was an issue.
And I'm sure having those two sets of eyes makes it easier to pinpoint errors as well, because you're not just completely engrossed in the process. You can send it away, get it back, and then you'll have a keener eye to be able to catch those things. So overall, I think it's just such a good way to work.
It is, yeah.
Okay, so if 2017 was all about getting into paper patterns, it's the end, it's December. What is 2018 looking like for you?
I guess 2018 is actually fulfilling this. Now that I have the money in the bank, or I will at the end of the month when all the pledges are processed, the beginning of the year will definitely be about making sure that's done brilliantly and everyone gets their patterns on time and are happy. But the reason I did the Kickstarter was so that I can start producing patterns more regularly and consistently, because in 2 years I've only released the 3 patterns because it's hard and there's so much work. And by taking my patterns into print, I hope that it becomes more financially sustainable for me to run this little business, which will hopefully, well, the plan is then that I can start producing patterns more regularly.
That's so exciting. I can't wait to see what your next pattern is. Do you have an idea? Can you give us a little
teaser? I have so many. The problem with, I think my biggest challenge is I start working on something and I'm all about that pattern and I go. But because my work takes me so long, then suddenly the season I'm designing for just comes and goes. Mm-hmm. So the next pattern was supposed to be a pair of pants or trousers, and they have been graded. The instructions are done. That was done maybe, I don't know, 3 months ago. And suddenly it was coming into summer in Australia. And I thought, I can't release a pair of pants now. And so then I jumped onto a dress, a tunic, which I'm working on, which is basically ready to go to the grader now. But now we're in December. again, I feel like I'm missing the season. And although there are people making clothes all over the world and none of my patterns have actually lined up in the right season for Australia just yet, I'd really try and release my patterns in time for the season I'm living in. Because although there's not heaps of us in Australia sewing, there's definitely enough that I want people to have options here, because obviously most of the pattern designers are in the Northern Hemisphere and releasing for the opposite season. So I really like the idea of, you know, staying true to where I am and where I'm from and the people in my direct community here.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And I think that there are a lot of Aussie sewists. I think on a previous episode, we mentioned that we weren't sure if there were many out there, and we got so many messages of people saying like, we're here. So I think you've got a good customer base out there, and that's such a great plan to sort of plan for your own season. It makes a lot of sense.
And I also feel because there's not too many pattern designers here, the Australian makers are just so excited about it. So even though the numbers aren't as high as elsewhere, I feel like still a huge majority of my sales are to Australians who are hoping to support an Australian and buying a pattern that works for their season. So to me, it just makes sense to do it this way.
Yeah, that's really great. And I do want, before we wrap up this conversation about your Kickstarter campaign, I want to be clear to our listeners that they can continue to support you until the end of the month, because every little bit counts, and all the funds that you're getting, you're going to use them to sort of propel your business forward and work on new patterns. So it doesn't stop here. Please go check out the Kickstarter campaign. We're going to link it in the show notes because we want to get as much support for you as possible.
Well, thank you. And yeah, as I said, I've got these couple of patterns ready to go. So although the Kickstarter was about getting my three existing patterns into print, if I go over the goal, I will be able to get these next patterns straight into print when I release the digital versions of them, which would be really exciting. And as you say, it would be a really good chance to propel my business.
That is just incredibly exciting. We're so happy for you.
Thanks.
We also wanted to touch on Fashion Revolution Week because you're involved in that. Can you tell our listeners what that is and how you participate in Fashion Revolution Week?
So when I was in London and working for The Good Wardrobe, it was at the time that the Rana Plaza building came down in Bangladesh, so a lot of garment workers died, and it really brought the garment industry into the spotlight and started making people question where we're getting our clothes made and the circumstances of the people making our clothes. So I was living in London at the time, and Zoe, who I was working for, was very much involved in kind of spreading awareness about that, and London is where Fashion Revolution started. So The people who started it, I'd seen them around at London Fashion Week and kind of at events that I'd gone to while I was interning. So I just thought it was an amazing cause. And in the first year, we did a mending workshop at a great shop in London. So I just felt, because I was there from the beginning, it was just such a great cause to support. When I moved back to Sydney, I started thinking about how this would impact makers, because Fashion Revolution is more about who was making the clothes that you're buying from retailers or the high street. And I wasn't sure that even many makers were even thinking about these issues and how it actually impacts us. And I was thinking about how I could start spreading awareness in the space. It was a few days before, and I mentioned to Kate, my studio buddy, that I was thinking of just doing one of these Instagram photo challenges that I'd seen other people do so well to spread the word. And she thought it was a great idea. And I thought, even if I just spread it a little to a few people, I would feel like I was making a difference. And I shared it on Instagram, and I just couldn't believe how wild everyone went for it. I was getting reposted and all these comments, and everyone seemed really thrilled and interested and eager to learn about it. So each day I would put a prompt up. So for example, by hand, I would say, and people would take photographs of things that were made by hand. And That element has always been really important to me, because although we're making our own clothes and we know who's doing it, I think sometimes we undervalue the other hands that are making clothes. So the things that we don't make, and, you know, clothes are always made by hand. They're not just produced by a machine.
Yeah. And you also offer like a free printable, I made my clothes little poster that people can print out and like hold up in front of them, which I love seeing those posts from people.
Well, yeah, and they're actually, that's all done by Fashion Revolution. So they have so many amazing resources on their website for all different people to use. So whether you're a customer or a maker or a teacher or kind of whatever you're interested in, or however you see yourself, there's some resources that you can use to get involved. So I love that printable that says, I made my clothes. And at the beginning of Fashion Revolution, I encourage people to print it out and hold it up. Because although it's great encouraging it in our space, it's also great for the people who, say, follow our accounts that don't make their clothes and might never make their clothes, but at least then they'll think about what they're buying and see the discussion taking place like that.
Yeah, it's really great. And I like the encouragement to ask the companies that you buy from who made your clothes. And I've noticed a definite uptick in companies trying to be more transparent about that information and working that into their marketing and their relationship with their customers. And I think this kind of campaign definitely has an impact on that.
For sure. And it's a no-brainer now, because if they're competing with companies that are really transparent, like, customers have really good choices now. So I can't see why people would go down an avenue with a store that's very cagey about who's producing it, when you've got these other companies who are just, you know, waving the flag, saying exactly who's making it and how it's made. And it's just such an easy choice to support those companies.
Yeah, for sure. So if people want to participate in Fashion Revolution Week with you, when does that take place?
It's around the 18th of April. So I haven't checked what the dates will be for 2018, but it's in April. And basically, I'll just put a call out on my blog and my Instagram, and then people can use the hashtag makers4fashrev. And then that's a great way that you can see what other people are doing. I just post a daily prompt, so people kind of have a direction to post in and hopefully give people inspiration. And it's just incredible hearing the conversations and seeing the conversations people are having about it. And I particularly love when someone stumbled upon it and upon the challenge and have no idea about it, and after 7 days are ready to really change their buying habits or set a really amazing goal for what they want to do to make a difference.
Yeah, I think that what you're doing with this is so great. And we're definitely going to pop links for everything in the show notes. So if our listeners want to go check it out, they can go to our website and do that. So to wrap up, will you tell our listeners where they can find you online?
So my website is www.inthefolds.com. And my Instagram is the same. You can kind of find me in any place with that handle, but I'd say Instagram is my home and where I'm the most active, and where you'll probably be able to find the most about what I'm doing and what I'm currently working on.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Emily, for chatting with us today. And
we're so proud of you.
We're so proud of you.
Well, thank you. And thanks for having me. And how amazing is this community supporting each other like we do?
Oh my gosh, yes. And everybody that's listening, if you have the chance, please go check out the Kickstarter. Support Emily if you can. Mm-hmm. And I mean, Emily, congrats. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
That's it for today's episode of Love to Sew. Caroline, if listeners want to get in touch with you directly, how can they do that?
You can find me on Instagram at Blackbird Fabrics or visit my shop, blackbirdfabrics.com.
And you can reach me on Instagram at helens_closet and check out my blog at helenscloset.ca.
And we're recording today in finally sunny Vancouver, Canada. You can find show notes for this episode at lovetosewpodcast.com.
And we would love to hear from you. If you have any questions, comments, or 2018 ideas for us, leave us a voicemail. You can reach us at 1-844-SEW-WHAT. That's 1-844-739-9428. Or email us at hello@lovetosewpodcast.com.
And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. We love reading your reviews. It will help other sewists discover us. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Just search Love to Sew.
Thank you guys so much for listening, and we will talk to you next week.
Go support Emily on Kickstarter.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye. Oh, that's you.
No, isn't it you?
Nope.
Oh. But you said you were going to do this part.
No, because...
You said, I'm reading the highlighted parts.
No, you're reading the highlighted part.
Fine.
No,
fine,
right.
I'll do
you're
it.
Right. No, you're right.
No, I'm doing it.